Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
That's good. I'm glad to hear you respond so well, because there was a moment for me, and it could have just been me, but there was a moment for me that I felt the energy just suck right out of the room. And so the fact that you were responsive to good morning is a good sign that maybe it was just me and your energy didn't suck out of the room. So I'm going to start with a few questions. They're relatively simple questions, or statements, rather. So I need you to kind of stay with me, okay? I don't need you to roll your eyes at me or anything like that. I just need you to stay with me because we're going somewhere. But there are things that impact me and affect me that don't impact you and affect you at all. Sometimes because you know absolutely nothing about them. And sometimes because they just affect me. Now, there are things that affect and impact you that don't affect and impact me at all. Sometimes because I don't know about them, and sometimes because they just have nothing to do with me. But then there are things in life and things in the world that affect all of us in some way, even if they affect me in a different way than they affect you. Still with me? Okay. Then there are things in life that affect all of us, that affect us differently because of the approach that we take to them and the perspective that we have on them. A perfect example of this is money and stuff. We all have stuff, right?
Yes.
There went the energy sucked right out. I told you to stay with me. We all have stuff. Some of us have more stuff than others. Some of us have less stuff than others. Some of us have stuff that I never want to be my stuff. And I have stuff that you never want to become your stuff. But we all have stuff. And there's other stuff that most of us want, right?
Right.
Thank you. The culture around us tells us that the answer to the pursuit of life is oftentimes found in the accumulation of more stuff. The approach that the culture around us encourages us to take is more. And more becomes a moving target. Because guess what? When you pursue more of, there always is. There's always more. And so more becomes a moving target, almost like a carrot that the culture dangles out in front of us and says, pursue this. Get this and you'll be happy. Now get this and you'll be happy. Now get this and you'll be happy. All of it is about the pursuit of more. How many of you would say more to the tune of the amount of $5 million would be great?
Every day.
$5 million. No, just $5 million in general. You would be amazed at the stuff people will do for the promise of $5 million. All right. Here we go. You ready? All right. I'm ready. There. Now we're ready. Okay. For $5 million, 54% of people would listen to nothing but country music for the rest of their lives. For $5 million. All right, next one. 42% of people for $5 million would have all of their teeth removed. Next one. 25% of people would eat a live cockroach every day for the rest of their lives for $5 million. 24% of people would live in solitude for the next 20 years for $5 million. This one is the one that blew me away. 50% of people would take $5 million knowing that a random person would have to die and they would never know who it was. Because we want to be rich. And we think that the answer to the pursuit of what we want in life is to be rich in the pursuit of more. For $5 million, we would do these things. Well, here's an interesting question that's a take on this pursuit of the culture, encouraging us to pursue rich, which is a moving target, a carrot dangled out in front of us that we can never really achieve. How many of you think you're already rich? Yeah. What do you think? Most Gallup Research did a survey. And their survey, they asked, what would it take for you to be considered rich? And the interesting thing was that people's answers varied based on how much they already had. Which, once again, goes to show this moving target thing. For people who made about $30,000 a year, they said that they would be rich if they made $74,000 a year. So basically, if you just a little over double the amount of money that you make, you would be rich. Now, for people who make $50,000 a year, they said it would take $100,000 to be rich. And for people who make well into the six figures, they said it would take $5 million in assets to make them feel rich. And we've already seen what people will do for $5 million. The pursuit of more, money and stuff, affects all of us, though differently because of the different approaches we take, the different perspectives that we have, and sometimes it affects us differently based on how much we have. The pursuit of more becomes a carrot dangled in front of us. And Jesus knew this about people. He knew that people would be encouraged and inclined for the pursuit of more. And so he talked a lot about money and stuff to give us a right perspective, to give us a way to navigate the tendency of more that doesn't lead to the satisfaction and fulfillment that we often think the next thing will. One day, Jesus is teaching a crowd of people. And the first century doctor and historian Luke, who thoroughly investigated everything in Jesus' life, talked to eyewitnesses, hung out with his followers, gathered all this information about what had taken place in Jesus' life, wrote an account of it so that we could have an accurate record of what took place. He records that as Jesus is teaching this crowd, he gets interrupted by a man in the crowd who is in a direct conflict with his brother about money and stuff. And here's what Luke says. Excuse me. Here's what Luke says the guy calls out. He says, "Teacher, please tell my brother to divide our father's estate with me." Now, in the Jewish culture, a father's estate would have been divided up among all of the siblings. The oldest would have gotten a double portion, and then every other sibling in the family would have gotten an equal amount. Now, how that breaks out, I don't really know. Did the older brother get half of everything, or did they do this and then double quiet? I don't know how they did that. But the older brother would get a double portion, and all the other siblings would get the remaining in equal parts. It's likely that in this particular case, this is a younger brother calling out to Jesus, telling him to encourage the older brother to share the estate. The implication is that the older brother wants to keep the entire estate for himself and not divide it equally among his siblings. I don't know about you, but I'm glad that it's just a first century thing that people want to take more for themselves, even if that means others get less. I'm glad that's just a first century thing that happened. That appears to be what's going on in this story. Teachers, the other word that's used for teacher often is rabbi, which means a teacher in the Jewish law, a teacher in the Jewish religious system. In the Jewish religious system, a teacher and a rabbi would have also been able to settle legal disputes among people. So this man is coming to Jesus, recognizing him as a legal, as an authority that can settle a legal dispute between he and his brother. He's wanting Jesus to get involved. He's wanting Jesus to solve this problem about money and stuff between them. Jesus, however, doesn't get involved, at least not in the way that the brother expects him to, because Jesus looks back at him and says, "Friend, who made me a judge over you to decide such things as that?" Now, Jesus probably could have made a decision, probably had the authority to make a decision, had the moral grounds to make a decision. He could have said, "Okay, listen, share with your brother. Your dad told you that since you were a child. You know, from day one, when you took whatever it was and said, 'Mine,' your dad said, 'No, it's ours, so share it.'" And so Jesus could have said all that. But Jesus says, "Wait, I'm not getting involved in this." And the reason why is because Jesus had an uncanny knack for knowing what was going on in the human heart and in the human mind. And Jesus knew that no matter what answer he gave, no matter what resolution he suggested to the dispute between the two brothers, it was not going to get to the core root of the problem as to why someone wanted to take more for themselves, even at the expense of someone else. Jesus wanted to take time in this encounter to address the heart behind the pursuit of money and stuff. And so he says, instead of settling the dispute, he says to the brother, he says, "Beware, be on guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much you own." Jesus says, "Hold on a minute. I get the dispute between you, but you need to be careful because you're heading down a path in the pursuit of money and stuff that is going to do relational damage and is going to be productive and helpful. And guard against every kind of greed." The simplest definition of the word that's used for greed here is the pursuit of more and more. Jesus says, "Be on guard against the pursuit of more and more," because though we tend to think life is measured by how much we own, life is not measured by how much you own. He says very clearly, it's easy to say, the culture around us tells us, if we just accumulate a certain amount of stuff, if you make $30,000 and you can accumulate $74,000, then you have value and you have worth and you're now a success. Well, when you hit the $50,000 mark, you're not even $274,000. But now all of a sudden, the line moves to $100,000. And then you have value and worth and you're a success. And then when you get to $100,000, it's $5 million in assets and you have to eat live cockroaches for the rest of your life, listen to country music, live in solitude for 20 years, and somebody has to die and you don't even know who it is. And Jesus said, "Be careful. Beware. Guard against every kind of greed. Life is not measured by how much we own." And then Jesus tells a story about a guy that everybody in that culture would have viewed and considered to be rich. As a matter of fact, when Jesus starts the story, he calls him a rich man. And he says, a rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, "What should I do? I don't have enough room for all my crops." The way that Jesus tells this story, the implication is that the rich farmer, go ahead, go back one slide for me, that the rich farmer, go back one more. There we are. That the word "my" there is put in a different color. Jesus is saying this guy is not only taking ownership of his crops, but he's also taking credit for them. He's saying, "These are my crops. I've done all the work and I've done it." And when he does this, He is pushing God out of the equation. And Jesus says right there is the root cause of the problem in the pursuit of more. This guy has a problem. And the problem is he has so much stuff he doesn't know what to do with it. And his perspective has been, I am responsible for all the stuff that I have accumulated. And he pushes God right out of the mix. Rather than giving God any credit whatsoever, he takes all the credit for himself. And Jesus is beginning to expose the heart behind the pursuit of more. Now, the other thing that's interesting is this guy, the problem that he has, apparently he has rich people problems. Wouldn't you love to have rich people problems? His rich people problem is he has so much stuff, he doesn't even know where to store it. His two-car garage is packed full of stuff. His storage unit around the corner is packed full of stuff. He doesn't have enough space for all the stuff that he has. Man, it would be nice to have rich people problems, wouldn't it? Now, here's the thing. Some of us are carrying legitimate financial challenges. Some of us are carrying legitimate financial stress for whatever reason. And I don't want to minimize that in any way, because those challenges are real and that stress is real and the tension and conflict and worry associated with it is real. But if we push pause on the financial challenges that we face, most of us in reality face rich people problems. We get upset because Amazon didn't deliver our package in one day. It took them 2 days. And we went and paid $7.50 for a coffee that wasn't as hot as it was supposed to be. And I didn't get the dippy sauce for my nuggets when I went through the drive-thru. And then when I got home, my Netflix account wouldn't connect to my internet. And I wasn't about to try Prime TV because they couldn't next day deliver my package. So I just put in my AirPods and listened to Spotify and brooded about it for a while. Aren't those rich people problems? We can play almost any song in the world on any of our devices. We can watch whatever movie we choose on our devices. When we get hungry and we don't want to cook, we get in a car, which if we have one, puts us in the top 15% of wealthiest people in the world. Most of us have more than one, right? Just one puts us in the top 15% of richest people in the world. But we get in that car and we drive by 15 to 20 restaurants until we get to the one that we prefer, where we get in a drive-thru and order food that someone else has shopped for, someone else has prepped and cooked and packaged to hand out the window to us, very likely to a timer that is making sure they get their food out fast enough to us so we don't complain about the speed at which the food came out. And sometimes we don't just go to one restaurant, we go to two because the four people who live in our home can't agree to one. What should I do? What should I do? I don't have room enough for all my stuff. He has rich people problems, but guess what? So do we. Rich people problems in the pursuit of more. Well, Jesus goes on, the rich man comes up with a solution. And the solution is, he goes, I know what I'll do. Now you can go to the next slide. There we go. I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. I'll have room enough to store all my wheat and other goods. Go ahead. And I'll sit back and say to myself, my friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Enough. Now, the guy has some wisdom. He plans for the future. Planning for the future is a good thing. That's a wise step to do. Take time to make sure you're going to have enough and all of that. But he says, I have enough stored away for years to come so that I can take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry. This man lives under an assumption. An assumption that everything he accumulates is there for his consumption. And oftentimes we are tempted to live under the consumption assumption. That all that I accumulate, I assume is there for me to consume. The interesting thing is, the man had so much. We don't get any indication in the story that he considered how he could leverage what he had for the benefit of others. He didn't ever consider how the excess that he had could be leveraged to help someone else's circumstance in life. There's the only indication we have in Jesus' story is that enough was for him, that more was for him. I have so much, I don't know what to do with it, so I'll just build bigger barns. Then I'll have enough. When I get this size barn, then it's enough. Then it's big enough. And then I can take all the stress and all the conflict and all the tension and all the worry of accumulating more and more and more off my plate. Then I can step back and take it easy. Anybody ever lived in that cycle? Our son, David, not long ago came home and told us that we were going to see an unusual or an extra $4 charge on his bank account. He was at a local gas station and was approached by an individual asking him for help. Now, the person didn't ask for money. He asked for food. And David felt God tug at his heart. And he went back into the store and he bought the guy food. Spent $4. Because he leveraged what he had to benefit someone else. When it would have been easy for him to say, but I don't have a bigger barn yet. But he leveraged what he had. Let me tell you another story about him. It's kind of a little off the subject, but kind of still on the subject. So, wow, he's back there. He tried to mute me. Did you try to mute me or did it just cut out?
I didn't touch anything.
Yeah. He's a teenage boy. He lies. So, he has had the opportunity to start refereeing soccer. He got his referee certification. He has the opportunity to start doing some games. And he gets paid through a system, and they don't do any kind of withholdings. They don't do any taxes or anything like that. And so the conversation that we had is you need to determine how much you will owe in taxes as a result of this stream of income, and then you have to give and save on top of that. So we figured all that out, and I mean it's a chunk out of every amount that he gets that comes out. And, I mean, one of the first times, it was a little bit like sticker shock of, that's all I have left after this. And I told him, I said, you'll never regret taking that step and placing money and stuff in the right priority in your life. You'll never regret not holding out the taxes and not holding out the give and not holding out the save part. You'll never regret that. He went to one of the guys that runs the league and schedules the soccer guys and the referees and all that. And he asked him, he said, now, he goes, do you guys take taxes out and all that, or am I responsible for that? And the guy looked back at him and kind of chuckled a little bit. He goes, you know, you're the first person that's ever asked me about taxes on this money. And they've done this for years and years and years. And again, it was about this idea of doing what's right in relationship to money and stuff. Not about hoarding it for yourself and not paying your responsibilities and all of that. But leveraging what you have for what's right. And, yeah, you know, I mean, is it okay to look for the future and plan for the future today where you can take it easy and eat, drink, and move? Absolutely there is. But what Jesus says to the guy next begins to expose more of what he's getting into at the heart level in the story. And he says, You fool. You will die this very night. Then who will get everything you work for? Now, I don't know about you, but the word fool seems pretty harsh. Jesus doesn't use that word because he's mad at the man for having money and stuff. It's okay to have money and stuff. God doesn't mind us having money and stuff. He just doesn't want money and stuff to have us. Money and stuff had this guy's heart. And so Jesus uses this word and then says, here's the deal. This very night, you're going to die. And what's going to happen to the bigger barns? What's going to happen to the wheat? What's going to happen to all the crops? What's going to happen to everything that you've accumulated? You know what's going to happen to it? It's not going to be yours anymore, even though you said it's mine, even though you claim responsibility and credit and all of that for it. It's not going to be yours anymore. It's going to belong to someone else. The pursuit of money and stuff for each and every one of us, if you write nothing else down from today, write this down. The pursuit of money and stuff for each and every one of us ends the same way. At some point, somebody else owns it. All of it. Everything. But the culture teaches us that that's what brings satisfaction. That's what brings happiness. But it is the same way. Eventually, someone else is going to own all my stuff. Or, depending on your perspective, eventually someone else is going to have to go through all my stuff. Catch up with that real quick. Somebody's going to have to go through all my stuff. And then Jesus goes on. And he says, yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth but not have a rich relationship with God. All of a sudden, Jesus moves this story from the temporal to the eternal. From the things of this world to the things of relationship with God. He said, it is possible to get so wrapped up in the pursuit of money and stuff that we ignore our relationship with God. He said, you would be so much better off to have less money and stuff and a rich relationship with God than a whole bunch of money and stuff and a poor relationship with God. Now, these are just general studies and general conclusions. But whereas the world teaches us that more money and stuff leads to happiness, study after study shows that those with greater wealth have a lesser level of satisfaction and happiness in life than those who have less wealth. And the studies say that the reason is because those with greater wealth tend to place their confidence in their wealth and in their ability to accumulate wealth. Whereas people who have less wealth have a tendency to place their trust in God to provide for their needs more than their wants. It says that people who are of greater wealth tend to put their focus on wealth, whereas the people with lesser wealth tend to put their focus on relationships with those around them. Jesus encountered a guy who was in a conflict with his brother and said, life is not measured by what you own. It's not about how much you accumulate. And then Jesus told a story about the pursuit of more and how eventually someone else will wind up with all of our stuff. And the most important thing in life is not the accumulation of more money and stuff, but the pursuit of a rich relationship with God. So what would it take for you to be considered rich? $5 million in assets? Just a little bit more? Or a rich relationship with God? What if we were already rich, but just had to accept it? We pray for this morning. Dear God, thank you for today. Thank you for this brother who came to Jesus with a conflict between he and his brother about money and stuff. Because through that brother, Jesus was led to tell a story that reveals how the pursuit of more becomes nothing more than a carrot that is dangled in front of us that we will never fully and finally reach, and that will never fully and finally satisfy. And God, no matter where we stand in the midst of the pursuit of more, whether we have little or we have a lot, or whether our perspective is a little skewed, help each and every one of us to take a step to gather the right perspective about money and stuff, and even more importantly, right relationship with you. We pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you again for choosing to spend this time with us. Whether it was your first time in a long time, first every time, we hope it's not your last time. Hope you'll join us again next week as we look at part 3 of the Chasing Carrots series. We'll roll a preview video for you. When the preview video is over, you are dismissed. And you know how I typically... Not done yet. You know, I typically will tell you when I'm painting at our house and invite you to come and all that, which no one, by the way, has ever accepted. Just letting you know that up front. Tonight at 5, where's Amanda? Is it 5 o'clock?
5:30.
5:30, see, I don't know. Tonight at 5:30, the student ministries of the church is going to come out and we're going to do some work around the playground area and kind of do some cleanup and break in some mulch and spread some stuff like that. So, if any of you would like to come and join with them and kind of clean up the playground area a little bit, we would love to have you. We're going to get some food, right? Is that right? We're going to have food. Yeah, there you are. We're going to have food, right? Okay, we're going to have some food, so we would love to have you join us. If you'd like to come do that, you'd certainly be welcome.